Hey everyone, it's Eric from Garden Fork. Just a quick note here. Oh, Charlie's just parked herself here. We have published a small book about the Garden Fork Labradors. This all started because I wanted to give out as Christmas presents to friends and family a little book of photos of the pups. And then I thought, well, why don't we make it available to people that watch and listen to the show? So it's a small book. It's about 30 pages. It's a paperback book, but it's got some really nice photos of the dogs in it. It's called The Labradors of Garden Fork. There's a link on the site to buy it. So gardenfork.tv. Look for the link to buy the book. All right. Thanks. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Garden Fork Radio. I'm Eric Rotra with my friend Charlie.
Howdy.
And I am up in Connecticut today, and Charlie is down in Queens studying for school, right?
Yes, indeed.
There's been a number of guest Garden Fork radios we've posted, and Charlie and I have been kind of missing each other lately, so we finally got together here virtually, and we're going to talk for a while.
Okay, then.
So I have been out of town. Charlie has a cold, by the way, so he's going to do a little coughing, so sorry about that. I have been out of town a lot, and I've been kind of out of touch with things, but I went on a trip to San Francisco in Oakland, California, and people kind of asked me, well, Eric, you're a handyman in Brooklyn. What are you doing going to San Francisco and Oakland? But before I was a handyman, I used to work in the photography and video worlds, and one of my best friends, Richard, who Charlie knows,
yes,
he is a successful commercial photographer, and when he gets a big job, he calls me and says, I need you to come with me. And we used to be photo assistants together for a couple of big-name fashion photographers. And so I work with him when he gets a big job. And he had to go to San Francisco and Oakland to take a bunch of photographs for an advertiser. And so I went to San Francisco for a week. So it was great. It was a lot of work. I mean, we worked long days, but then we would have the evening to go out and eat food. So that was good. So,
and San Francisco is known for being a food town.
Yeah, we were mainly in Oakland, and Oakland kind of reminded me of being the Brooklyn of San Francisco.
Oh, excellent.
It had, you know, the funky areas. It had some not so great areas as well, but we were at the Claremont Hotel, if anyone knows where that is in Oakland, California. But we got a number of great places to eat, and I really liked the weather there, and if I didn't live in New York and Connecticut, I might move out there.
But it is a very different kind of place. I took trips out there, and I'm an East Coast guy, and I think I just love the East Coast and the Appalachian Mountains. And the first time I went out there with a girlfriend, I think 2 minutes into our trip, we're driving into San Francisco at night in the dark, and I leaned over and I said, I could never live here. 'Cause it just feels so different. But it is a great place.
Yeah, I really liked it there. It was, but the people are different. They're much more laid back. I mean, New York City has a, well, without being child friendly, let's just say there's some real angry people here, and they will not think twice about venting it on you.
True that.
Whether you're in the subway or in a car or whatever, and that kind of takes its toll on you after a while. I mean, a lot of people when they come to New York in their 20s, like I did and like Charlie did. And, you know, when they get in their 30s and 40s, they leave. And I don't blame them because it's a great town, but it's also, it can grind on you after a while.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You do pay a certain price for living here.
Yeah. But that was, I really liked Oakland and San Francisco. And thanks to everyone on Facebook or Twitter that I asked about suggestions for food and stuff. And we went to a couple of places. We went to Don Tomas, I think it's called. It was a kind of a Mexican Latin place that was pretty phenomenal and very low key. You know, none of this pretentious stuff. We did go to one restaurant with some of the guys in the crew, and we sat down, and one of the guys who was this extrovert just said, "We can't eat here." And he just got up, and we all left and walked right back out again. And it was very interesting because a lot of people would be polite, and they're like, "Oh, it's a little weird, but we'll stay here." But he knew what he wanted, and I give him credit for that. So we just got up and we went to the next restaurant. So.
What was it that he didn't like about it?
He didn't like the smell.
Okay, that's that makes sense. I mean, it wasn't like it was just a particular food smell, or was it an actual unpleasant odor?
It wasn't an unpleasant odor. He just didn't like the smell of the place. So I was like, okay. All right, and yeah. I, you know.
More people should be like that, I think. So
I agree.
Yeah. And then I was in San Francisco for a week. I came back. We went to Connecticut for the weekend. And then I flew to Los Angeles. So I went from New York, San Francisco, back to New York, and then took the 6 a.m. flight to Los Angeles, because Ford Motor flew me out to the Los Angeles Auto Show for the rollout of the North American Ford Fiesta.
So they're actually going to start selling them in North America now, then, I'm guessing.
Yes, and okay. you can pre-order them if you go to the FiestaMovement.com or Ford.com. You can learn about pre-ordering an American version of the Ford Fiesta.
Right, right.
And it was wild. So they flew a bunch of the people out there that had been involved with them promoting the car. You know, they gave a bunch of people the European Ford Fiesta to use on their web video shows or their blogs or whatever. So it was a bunch of web-enabled extroverts running around.
Okay.
On a bus. And,
right.
I mean, I have a certain kind of extrovertedness, but I'm fairly quiet when you meet me in person. And all these people are like pointing their streaming video cameras at themselves and taking pictures of each other and posting all this stuff. And I was kind of, I was like, yeah, I'm just going to hang out here and have a beer, you know?
Right.
But we went to the people that hosted us, Action Marketing Group and Ford Motor Company, were really nice. They took really good care of us. They put us in this fancy hotel. The hotel room was bigger than my apartment. You know, with one of those
That's not surprising.
With all those big fancy tubs and everything. But we were part of the unveiling of the car. So at the Los Angeles Convention Center, Ford had a big display area, and they had the Fiestas under these giant, looked like giant silk parachutes, you know?
Right.
And Mark Fields was there, who's the president of Ford North America, who's kind of a buddy of mine now. I've seen him a bunch of times. And we unveiled the Ford Fiestas for all this press. It was a bunch of people, a bunch of camera and photographers there, and writers and journalists. It was really kind of interesting. It was kind of fun. I was kind of jazzed about it.
Did they have Mike Rowe there?
No, Mike wasn't there that I knew. Hey, I'm the next Mike Rowe.
Okay. This is true. This is true. So they had Eric Rothschild there.
Yeah, they didn't have Mike. They had Eric there. So. I told Mark Fields that the other day. I said, I'm the Mike Rowe of Ford's social media campaign. He politely nodded.
Being politic as he was.
Yeah. He's got a hard job, man. He's put it together there. Good for them.
Yeah, good for them indeed.
So, but I had a couple of observations about, and I've been writing, I got a little Moleskine book finally, so I can write things down when I have ideas.
Right,
despite
right.
the fact that I have an iPhone, you know, the most... you know, advanced machine in the world. I still like paper.
Right.
And I was in a rush to get the flight out of New York, and, you know, the bagel place in my neighborhood wasn't open at 4 o'clock in the morning. But at the airport, the Starbucks, a little Starbucks thing was open. A little Starbucks.
Right.
What's that called? Kiosk or something?
Airport kiosk.
And in New York City, Mayor Bloomberg has passed a regulation that food stores... basically, if you're larger than X amount of stores, you have to post the calorie count of your foods next to the prices.
Right, right. I've seen that.
So, and I think that's great, because when I go to the donut shop now and I see how many calories are in a donut, I only have one.
Yeah.
And I used to get two.
Yeah.
So, and they're
or
like,
three or four.
Yeah, you know, because like that, there's the Dunkin' Donuts on 3rd Avenue on the way to the Home Depot and the Lowe's, you know?
Right, right.
I don't go there anymore. It's like because of Mayor Bloomberg, you know, and I have need to lose weight. But at the Starbucks, I thought, oh, I'll just grab a quick muffin and a coffee. And I was looking at the muffins, and the muffins were all 350 or 320 calories, even the bran muffin.
Right.
And then I looked to the left of it at the apple Danish.
Yep.
240 calories.
Yep.
I didn't realize muffins had that many calories.
I'm learning this also, because I'm seeing these calorie counts in stores too, and it is kind of like, oh, it's like, yeah, I don't think I can eat that.
That was like kind of an aha moment that I just had to share with all our thousands of listeners here.
So what'd you end up doing?
I got a yogurt.
There you go.
They have the yogurt with the granola on the top. in a little plastic container, so I got that. And I'm sure it was like whole milk yogurt. It wasn't the super low fat yogurt that I buy at home, but it was still a, I think it was a better choice health wise than the muffin or the Danish.
Yeah, definitely.
And plus, when you travel, you know, you eat bad, and it just kind of blocks you up. So you just, you
It's
know.
yeah, I mean, if you have an opportunity to eat something that's not lousy, you ought to take it, because traveling's hard on your body anyway.
Yeah, I'm still a little burnt from, and then next week I have to go visit my parents. So I'm in Connecticut now. I was in New York for about 4 hours, and I drove up here because I had to get the puppies from our neighbor. We didn't want to foist them on them for too long. And then Monday morning I fly to my parents' house. I have to help my parents out, which we can talk more about in another episode. But elder care is fast looming for my family. So we're getting a crash course in that.
Oh, yikes.
Well, I mean, but you know, we're all learning, so I want to, you know, we'll go through that as we go through it. But
Yes, indeed.
what was, but I anyway, back to the Ford event, I met a lot of really neat people there that are kind of doing stuff like what we're doing. You know, this what's called social media or new media or web, you know, there's all sorts of names for it, but just people that don't work for a big corporation and are making something because they feel that they want to share it and they love what they're doing. And two of these people were Mandy and Joel, who have a website called pluggedinparents.com. So plugged like plugging in a lamp, pluggedinparents.com. And they've built this site from scratch, and it's for parenting. And I'm sure there's a number of parenting sites out there, but this one is built by two people that want to share information, and they're not being backed by a big company. So I love that kind of thing. I mean, there's no subtle message to buy this kind of infant formula or something like that. I mean, I'm sure they'll get sponsors as they go along, and I think that's fine. But Mandy is lactose intolerant. And they st we were talking about book publishing and stuff, and she goes, "Yeah, I just published a lactose free cookbook," which is available on their site and on Amazon. Amazon has a small publishing arm where you can upload a book and publish it through Amazon, and people can order it. Now we're gonna in the future we're gonna have some Garden Fork books, and we'll talk about that more.
Oh, that's exciting.
There might be one available before Christmas. I have to just double check some things, but it will be perhaps a photo book about the Labradors. What else would we do a book on?
People do like the Labradors.
Yeah, they do. But I bought a little recording microphone for the iPhone, and I did a quick interview with Joel and Mandy about their cookbook and their site. So I wanted to drop that in right here. We'll listen to this, and then Charlie and I will come back and we'll do some more talking. So here's me meeting with Joel and Mandy.
All right then.
Hey everyone, where are we? Oh, we're in Los Angeles. I forgot for a minute.
LA, California.
The LA Auto Show.
So we're at the LA Auto Show, and we were brought here by Ford for part of the Fiesta movement, and we're in the lunchroom. But I met Joel and Mandy here, and you have a parenting blog website.
We have a parenting website called pluggedinparents.com, and we specialize in updated, up to the second, pretty much, health info for parents.
All right. And you also have, what I liked about your site was that you have a pediatrician on staff, kind of. Is that how it is?
Yep. You can email our pediatric nurse practitioner with any question, and it's nice because you can do it anonymously. And because a lot of people are, when they get in the doctor's office, they can get a little shell-shocked and and
I
they clam
to
up.
Ask.
Yeah. So it's real simple. You can just shoot her an email. She gets back to you within a day or so. And we post all the answers anonymously on our website so other people can benefit from the answers, too.
Cool. I like that. And what the light bulb went off initially between us is that you guys have a cookbook out.
Yeah. We started our website just completely from the ground up. We don't pay for any advertising or anything, so we do everything word of mouth. And so we thought one way to get revenue coming into the site every month was to create our own cookbook. We created it through createspace.com, and we sell it on Amazon, and through the revenue that we get each month, we're able to pay for pretty much everything we need for the website.
To keep it all running.
Yeah.
Because people don't realize that it go to the website, but it takes money to keep that server running.
Right.
So people like us who are kind of doing it in the bootstrap kind of way, we have to pay for all that.
Right.
Until Ford or someone comes along and says we're brilliant, you know?
Exactly. Until we get bought out or get some great sponsorship.
Why did you do the lactose-free cookbook, though?
The lactose-free cookbook came about because I've been suffering from lactose intolerance since I was about 15 years old.
All right.
Never knew what it was. I kept going to the doctor. They kept telling me I was perfectly healthy, but yet I lived through all this terrible pain all the time.
Yeah.
And finally found out just about 2 years ago, after how many years of living with it, or about 15 years of living with it, found out that all it was I just shouldn't be eating lactose. So I went through kind of a shock phase where I thought I couldn't eat any more dairy.
Right.
And I'm a dairyholic, you know, I love everything, creamy. And so it crushed me that I had to switch everything to like rice milk and soy and vegetable, you know, cheese made out of vegetables and
protein,
that type of thing.
Yeah.
So I really started researching and found that you can find ingredients that still have dairy. They've just taken the lactose out of it. It still tastes exactly the same. So I started substituting these ingredients for all of the normal ingredients in my favorite recipes. And then when I collaborated with Monica, the pediatric nurse practitioner on our site, she deals with children who have all different types of food intolerances and allergies. So she knows the scientific process behind being lactose intolerant.
Right.
And then she is lactose intolerant to an extent herself. So I started teaching her how I've been cooking.
Yeah.
And we collaborated and we were like, you know, we need to make a cookbook. We thought we would just bind it at Kinko's and hand it out to our family so that they would know what to cook for us when we came over for holidays. They think they have to cook everything without dairy, and it's just not true. So
lactose is a component of milk.
Yes, it's the lactase enzyme is in milk. Yeah.
All right.
And as we get older, actually, it's all of us are lactose intolerant to an extent. Different races are more lactose intolerant than others, but pretty much 75% of the world's population can't digest dairy to the fullest extent. So as we get older, babies are actually born with an enzyme that allows them to digest breast milk.
Mm-hmm.
As you get older, that enzyme just kind of deteriorates.
Yeah.
And so some people will have digestive issues when they're much older, much later in life, because that enzyme deteriorated slower.
Mm-hmm.
My enzyme deteriorated really quickly.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's basically... And with this cookbook, we're pretty much the only one on Amazon or online that I've seen that actually teach you how to still incorporate dairy into your
instead
diet.
Of just kind of cutthroat non-dairy.
Right. Yeah.
I love that because that's the way you should really live. So.
I can attest. This is Joel, by the way.
Hi, Joel.
I can attest to the shell shock because when we cut out all the dairy, I mean, I couldn't eat the stuff. I mean, it was not good.
Yeah.
And then when Mandy figured out what things she could substitute, it was like, oh, well, this is normal.
You know,
just using lactate milk, for example. And
it tastes exactly like regular milk. They just took the enzyme out of it during the process.
And all of a sudden, all those recipes that we knew how to make, we had to learn how to cook all over again, now came back to the table just with a slight tweak, you know. And it really has helped me because, again, I'm not lactose intolerant, but if I eat a big bowl of ice cream, stomach hurts pretty bad, you know? And so almost by default, by going through the experience, I found out, hey, this is what I can handle, this is what I can't. You know, and if I'm going to go on a trip, maybe I shouldn't eat that big plate of cheese, you know, before I get on the plane or at the hotel. And it helped me out a lot, too.
So he's not lactose intolerant, but he's actually, he has a healthier stomach, you know, eating taking out the lactose benefits him too.
It just makes it easier.
Right.
It's easier because you don't have that extra enzyme to digest.
To have to deal with that. Mm-hmm. Maybe should look into that.
It's not hard to cook. I mean, if you know how to make spaghetti or any of these basic recipes that people who don't order out all the time have to do, you can do it.
So you were saying that Kraft products don't have the lactate?
Yeah, a lot of aged cheeses don't have lactose in them because the enzyme leaves during the aging process.
All right.
You obviously don't want to eat like a whole brick of cheese. Nobody really can handle that. But
my dog can.
Well,
that's a video we made actually.
But it is a reduced amount. So like on Kraft, it says 0 grams per serving.
Yeah.
So there is some. If you eat the whole brick, you would get some lactose.
Right. Right.
But it's so
minuscule that I can't feel it. Some people are so sensitive to lactose, they may be able to feel it. But in our recipes in our cookbook, we don't use massive amounts of the cheese.
I was heartened just to know that if I was lactose intolerant, I could have Kraft macaroni and cheese.
Yeah.
So
see that well. Maybe the powder might have.
I don't know if the box macaroni and cheese.
I'm wrong.
I
can make your own. You could.
In our cookbook, we make our own.
And that's better anyway.
Yeah.
It's not that hard.
Yeah, it's not hard at all.
I love Kraft macaroni.
I do too. Every once in a while I'll get it. But I haven't done any research into that.
All right.
Whether or not. But I do know that DiGiorno pizzas are made with Kraft cheese. So you can have.
Yeah, there's a good start there because you can look at like the Kraft family of brands and go, okay, well, here's a pizza. Let me look at the crust. Oh, hey, look, milk is in the ingredients, but it's less than 2%, because it's just in the dough or something.
Right,
so you
could,
as you go through the process, you could find out what your tolerance level is, and you may be able to say, even if you are lactose intolerant and it does hurt you to say eat a DiGiorno pizza, what if you're traveling or you don't have the capacity to eat the way that you want to? At least you can do the better option instead of, doing the worst possible thing. There is a gradient scale there, so.
All right. Well, cool. Was there anything else you wanted to point out?
In our cookbook, we actually give some dining out tips, too, because when you dine out, you pretty much, you don't get those lactose-free ingredients.
Right.
So when you dine out, you pretty much have to go dairy-free. And in our cookbook, we give out dining out tips. And then on our website, pluggedinparents.com, we actually have a growing list of restaurants, and we list all of the dairy-free items that you can have. So you can print out this list. I actually made them into little business cards. I have like a little business card that I printed out on my computer that says McDonald's, and it has everything
that's dairy-free
there. So when we're traveling, I just whip out my wallet and we say, okay, we're gonna stop at Burger King. Here's Burger King card.
Here's
what I have.
Yeah.
Can
the other cool French fries?
Some places you can have French fries. Some places have milk in their French fry batter, I guess.
Wow.
So
it's actually pretty cool because people will send us in tips too. They'll say, hey, this is a regional chain. Here's some items here. So
they'll ask us. You can email us and ask us to research a certain restaurant, and we'll research it and post it up there.
So it's kind of a two-way dialogue there.
So it's called PluggedInParents.com.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
All right.
Thanks so
Eric.
Much. It
was
fun.
Was that
fun? I love it. I absolutely love it.
That is really great.
So we have to take a quick break here. Come on back. We'll have more Garden Fork after this. You're listening to Garden Fork Radio. It's cooking, gardening, and other fun stuff with Eric and Charlie. Welcome back.
And it was really neat. And I bought this little microphone. It plugs right into the iPhone. And it uses their voice recorder application, and you can do pretty good interviews with it.
Oh, that's handy.
Or, you could record a band with it. It has three settings for sensitivity. If you're in a loud band room, turn it down.
Right.
So that was neat. I thought that was pretty cool.
So you'll have to record a band sometime and see how that comes out.
Speaking of bands, what have you been up to?
Well, Charlie is finishing up his first semester in graduate school here at Queens College. The end result of that, we're hoping, will be that I will be teaching elementary school.
That's great.
And first semester has gone pretty smoothly. I've liked my professors. I've learned a few things. Sometimes everyone that I talk to about taking ed courses, a lot of people say, yeah, I didn't learn a darn thing in my education courses. And teaching is definitely one of those things that it does seem like you mostly learn on the job. I've spent a lot of time both this semester and in previous semesters in classroom observation because I've taken ed courses before. And it's just one of those things that I think a lot of how you learn to do it is just doing it. And
yeah, you've said that before, yeah.
Yeah, some things work, some things do not work, blah, blah, blah. But it's been fun so far, and I think I'm going to, you know, come out pretty good at the end of it. I'll know in another week or two, and I guess we'll let you guys know how I did. One of the things about going back to school when you're middle-aged is it's when you're older than most of your professors, like a C-plus is just too embarrassing, you know, you feel like somehow you're betraying them or something. You kind of have to do good just because you're like, well, you're older. You're supposed to like, I don't know. It's just like the bar is somehow set higher that's my own internal kind of view on it. But also, I know that I think better now than I did when I was younger. Maybe, yeah. Maybe not as good as I would want to think, but definitely better. And somewhere along the line, I also apparently learned how to write because I tend to get good grades on my papers.
And wow.
Writing on a computer is much easier. When Eric and I were, you know, we're in college way back when, people either wrote on a typewriter or you still hand wrote your papers. And, you know, you just didn't have the instant editing that you have now on MS Word or whatever you're working on. So that's exciting. And the other thing that is very exciting for me is you guys probably know that I'm a musician. I play in several bands here in New York City. And last summer, I recorded a CD with a buddy of mine who actually does not live in New York City. His name is Drew Bunting, and he is as Bunting. And as Drew describes it, he is a for-real Episcopal priest who lives out in Wisconsin currently. And he's also a songwriter, and he's a friend of a friend. So we recorded Drew's CD this summer, and I don't think it's out yet. I've got a copy, and I have to say I'm pretty darn happy with it, and I'm not always necessarily... I'm always happy with the songwriting with the people that I play with, but I'm not always happy with my playing, and I'm even happy with my playing on this. So
Excellent.
Yeah, and it's coming out through... I'm looking at the booklet right now through this tiny little press called idiotsbooks.com. That's idiots with an S on the end and then books with an S on the end .com. And it's I believe it's a husband and wife team that are putting these things out, and I think this is the first one that's actually musical. And of course you can go to their website and find out what they're all about, and I believe this will be out at the beginning of the year. And then Drew, of course, also has his own website, which is drewbunting, all one word, .com. But it's a lot of sort of country folky stuff, but there's also some really wacky stuff on there. And my current favorite tune is Drew wrote a sort of stadium rock tune called I Want a Flava Flav. Which is really funny and was really fun to play. And I got to do a little drum solo on it, which is not really my forte. And but that came out pretty good also. And I think we got the drum solo on the first take. And when we listened back, they said, okay, we have to use this take because I'm never going to be able to do something that good again. In fact, if we ever play live, I'm going to have to sit down and learn the drum solo from myself again, because I don't think I can play it now. So that's kind of big news for me. And like I said, I think that'll be available in another month or so. And I'm sure you'll be able to listen to stuff online and see if it's your cup of tea or whatever. So that's what's going on with Charlie.
Well, cool. Well, we can link to that. And maybe we can play a little bit of that, of a couple of those songs on the radio show here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we should definitely do that at some point.
All right. That's great. I mean, I've known, you know, hello, listeners. I mean, Charlie and I have been friends. Charlie was my first roommate in New York when I graduated from college, and 3 days later I moved back to New York City. And Charlie was my first roommate in New York, and that's how long ago we know each other. And Charlie has always been doing music and always been practicing as well. I mean, he doesn't just go up there and wing it. He's always been like, oh, I'm going to practice now. And he goes in his room and he practices. So,
but there's plenty of winging that goes on also, which is true of especially when you start to get older. You kind of, you know, you figure out most of what you're going to do. And definitely part of the scene in New York City is bands always have people substituting, and there's always throw together bands that are playing gigs. But once again, it's people, and this is true, I'm sure, all over the country. People know their genre and they understand how to play a country song or a blues song or whatever. So, yeah, the winging is great. I played, hopefully this is going to be up on YouTube also at some point. Not too long ago, I was in a throw together band that was backing up a book reading by several authors here in New York City.
Uh-huh.
And my buddy Brian Slattery, who actually put together the Drew Bunting recording session, Brian Slattery has a couple of sci-fi books out. And actually, you can, if you plug Brian Slattery into YouTube, a couple of videos of us backing up Brian reading pop up, and those are fun. But so Brian put together this band for this reading, and we winged it, and it went fine and everything. And then a few days later, we got an email from one of the authors who said, I know how much time in rehearsal you guys put into, you know, preparing for this. And, you know, all the musicians, we could just hear each other cracking up over, you know, over the internet, because we were all like, we are so driving without the lights on here.
No, but cumulatively, you know, just the years of...
Yeah, yeah. You figure out how to do what you're going to do, and then you do... sometimes you rehearse, but And like I said, I think this is true all over. People wing it a lot more than you think. That's in everything. That's not just in music, I think.
Oh, it's totally in Garden Fork. I went on this advertising photo shoot, the art director from the agency came up to me and she goes, so do you work with a writer for your web video show? I was like, no.
No.
I sometimes Google things, but that's about it.
Right, right.
Oh, well, that's cool. All right, so we're going to link to the CD when it comes out, and we're going to link. Maybe we'll try and find that book reading, and we'll link to that as well.
Yeah, so, yeah, that'll be fun.
At gardenfork.tv, by the way, you can listen to all that, so... Hey, Charlie, are you ready for your Real World Green Minute?
I am indeed.
Or moment, Real World Green moment. It relates back to doing all the traveling I've been doing lately. When I go into a hotel room, there's always a ton of soap everywhere.
Yeah.
There's soap by the sink. There's soap by the... This one had a tub. This one had two showers in it. So I only use one bar of soap.
Right.
And I unwrap it, and I just leave it in the paper. You know, the paper just sits in the soap dish. And I move it from the sink to the bathtub to the shower to wherever, instead of unwrapping all the other soaps, because I think that's really wasteful. Because the soap that you have unwrapped, they're going to throw out.
Right.
And I take the unwrapped soap, I put it back in its little wrapper, and I bring it back with me to my apartment, and I use the rest of the soap.
Oh, man, good for you. That is being, like, super green.
And the FAA will allow you to have that go through your metal detector. So,
okay.
You know, when you're going through security. So, that's our green moment for the day there. Use one of the bars of soap in your hotel room. Don't unwrap them all.
An easy thing to do.
Yeah, there you go. So, hey, did you read that article in the New York Times I sent you?
I did indeed.
We were talking about hunting a couple episodes ago, and sure enough, in the New York Times, in their food section, and we will link to it here, is an article about urban and suburban guys, mainly guys, sorry, people who have taken up hunting, specifically deer and boar hunting.
Right.
And part of this is from Michael Pollan's book, The Omnivore's Dilemma, where he wants to find out where his food comes from. And he goes out and he says, well, I should be able to hunt my own food. And so he went wild boar hunting on the West Coast. And so he shot a boar and he butchered it and he cooked it. So there's a lot of people who were not raised on hunting, and yet they have an interest in it, but they don't really know who to ask to learn about it. So a couple of guys have started these essentially meetup groups, these hunting societies, in a couple of different cities. And right. So the New York Times wrote an article about it. And I don't want to sound like a gun zealot or a hunting maven, but I just think it's really good that people learn where their food comes from. And if there is an excess of an animal that's causing a problem, much like deer and boar are.
Right. I think a lot of areas now there's excess deer population.
Yeah. And in Florida and in California, there are wild boar, which are non-native. And they were introduced into the wild, and they're ruining the environment. They root up everything.
Right.
So I thought that was pretty cool. We'll link to the article there. But people, you know, I've been kind of advocating perhaps people consider hunting and learning about it. And that was just kind of a neat thing, I thought. And I was waiting for the people, you know, the New York Times readers in New York City to go all ballistic about it, but they didn't.
Well, it's like you said, both the article is good, and there's also a video that kind of talks about the same thing the article's talking about, but you actually, they interview a few of the people that are taking one of these classes, and yeah, they're not, they're just regular old folks that decide they want to try to save a few bucks, which is a good thing.
Yes, yes.
And, try something new to eat and get rid of some of the deers that are, you know, digging up their gardens in a lot of cases.
Well, also, I talk about the deer overpopulation. The biggest problem to me is deer accidents with cars.
Yeah. Which are bad.
Very bad. First of all, it can maim the deer, and then the deer runs off and it dies a horrible, slow death.
Right.
They have internal injuries and they're bleeding to death internally. And it causes people to be hurt as well.
Yep.
And that's just a bad thing. We have a, up in Connecticut here, the DEP puts out a map, a colored map, of deer accidents in the state.
Right.
And in the southeastern corner of the state, the southeast quarter of the state, it's all red dots.
Right.
And that's a urban area, and not a lot of hunting is done. Yeah,
right,
not a lot of
right.
hunting is done down there. so I just, in addition to hunting for food, you're also helping in a safety way as well.
Yeah.
So I finally started reading the Michael Pollan book, The Omnivore's Dilemma, on my trip to San Francisco, by the way.
Okay.
So it's I've in the past I've said about Michael Pollan, I think he uses too many words and I can't read the guy, but this book is very readable to me.
And what exactly is it about?
He's basically tracing food backwards from your plate. Where did it come from?
Right.
And he talks about corn, and corn is in everything. And he talks about beef, and I haven't gotten to the part where he goes hunting yet. But what a couple of things that really stuck out to me, which you can talk about in future episodes, but the cows, when they're in a feedlot and they're being fattened on corn-based products,
right?
They're also given tons of preventative drugs, I would basically say. And that stuff builds up in their liver. So I would avoid – and they talk about 1/3 of the animals that are slaughtered have abscesses on their livers from these drugs.
Right, right.
And also they are fed corn, which their stomachs are not built to digest.
Oh, okay.
So they are fed also basically an antacid so that they can stomach the corn.
Okay.
So I don't think we're ever going to be able to feed the world on small farm raised beef, but it's just one more thing to think about when you're buying food, and if you can afford or have in your budget for some grass-fed or range-raised beef or buffalo or whatever,
right.
It might be something to consider. All right, so enough of Eric pontificating about hunting and food and everything, but I'm liking the Michael Pollan book, and we'll talk. Is it Pollan or Pollan? I don't know.
I'm not even sure.
Yeah, well, we'll talk more about that as we go.
Okay.
Another cool thing, just kind of a by the way, I'm always looking for recipes online, and when I Google search recipes, there's a pull-down menu where you can search just blogs. And so
right.
I would suggest to people that if they're looking for recipes instead of – because whenever you – like allrecipes.com always comes up first, or Epicurious comes up
right,
first.
Right, right.
And I like to see what the individual is doing. So if you – along the top, there's – you can it says video, images, news, and then there's a little pull-down where it says more. If you click on that, a bunch of lists come up and pick blogs and search in blogs for different recipes. You'll find them. And I don't want to give you away too much information, but I'm going to be doing some deep frying this weekend, and it involves Twinkies. And I got some really really cool ideas from a couple of the blogs that I read that you would not find on a recipe site. So,
it's going to be exciting hearing about how this comes out.
Very hot oil and Eric and flame.
Yes, exactly. I'm already looking forward to the part about, and then the fire department showed up, which I know, I mean, I'm sure this happened more than once, but I did hear about that on one of the news radio stations that happening at on Thanksgiving, maybe in an urban area. I think someone was trying to deep fry in a place that was not appropriate for deep frying. So
yeah, don't deep fry in a garage or your basement or your house. You have to do it outside.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just like don't run your generator in your basement, you know?
Yeah.
But now we're talking about generators and motors and things. I got the oil changed in our car the other day.
Right,
and
right.
I go down to the Quickie Lube, you know, Jiffy Lube place, because basically it's going to cost me $25, but they deal with the waste oil then, because if I spill it in my garage, I get it on my concrete floor, and I have to take it down to either one of the car garages or my town hall where they recycle the waste oil. And for the $25, it's worth it for me just to go down there, and 15 minutes later, they're done.
Yeah, I think even the Car Talk guys say just go to a Quickie oil change place and have them deal with it.
And they suggest every 5,000 miles, even though the lube places want you to come back every 3,000.
Yeah.
But I have a little consumer protection suggestion for you, because every time I go there, and maybe they don't realize that I am the DIY celebrity that I am, but every time I go there, they want to sell me the engine oil wash or the sudsy oil foaming, because they always show me the oil coming out of the bottom of the engine and go, oh, look at this oil, it's dirty, and you need to clean the inside of your engine. And they want to do this, I don't know how much the thing costs, but they'll clean the inside of your engine for you. Well, you don't need to do that.
Right.
Because that's what the oil does. When you're draining the oil, you're taking the debris out.
Yeah.
And when you take the filter off, you're taking the debris out as well, because it's all been caught up into the filter. So the oil is, when you drain your oil, it's going to be dark. At the most, if you wanted to do, like if you wanted to clean the inside of your engine, go down to the Jiffy Lube or whatever, get your oil changed, drive it around for a week, and get it changed again.
There you go.
You don't need the foamy engine wash or whatever it is. I mean, I don't blame them for, they're trying to make a living, and this is a hard time to make a living.
Yeah, capitalism.
But it's not something that you need, so you can save your money there. So
there you go.
There you go. A little tip from Eric.
Yes, indeed.
Also, we're talking about engines. This time of year, I do it all year round, but I put gas stabilizer in all my small engines.
Okay.
Your lawnmower, your snowblower, anything that's a four-cycle engine. The gas stabilizer, the gas that's out these days is not nearly as good as the gas that used to be for small engines.
Okay.
So it ruins the carburetors, and any gas that sits in there will deteriorate the parts.
Okay.
And small engine carburetors, you really can't rebuild anymore, even though they sell rebuild kits. You basically have to end up buying a new one, and they're about $80 to $100 for a little carburetor.
Okay.
So if you use gas stabilizer, I don't care what brand you use, but I have 5-gallon containers of gasoline for the different things we use, and I mix it in there, and then I pour it into the different things.
And gas stabilizer is probably only a few bucks, right?
It's like $6 or $7 for, I think, a pint.
Right.
But you don't. I think you use 2 ounces for 5 gallons or something like that.
Oh, so you buy one and it's going to last you 10 years or whatever.
It'll last quite a while. It just depends on. But if you do that, your lawnmower will start up in the spring.
And that's when you want it to start up.
Yeah, because otherwise you've got this gunky gas that you're going to have to blow out of there. If you're having problems getting your mower or snowblower to start, drain out the gas tank and drain out the bottom of the little carburetor. There's a little screw under there. Be careful with it. And you can take the gas out, and the gas is probably bad, and put new gas in, and it just might start.
Okay, good good tip.
Hey, it's time for viewer mail.
Oh, okay. You mentioned that there was we had an exciting viewer mail today.
Yeah, this was really kind of cool. I mean, I get quite a bit of email, and I really like it. But this is one that was kind of like makes you think it's all worth it. This comes from a young person named Jordan. I'm 17 and a high school senior. I was introduced to your show by a friend who watched it for fun. Okay.
as opposed to what other reason could there possibly be?
Punishment. Yeah. You have to watch Garden Fork.
Ah!
I live in North Alabama and have never been interested in gardening, cooking, or home repair. But when she showed me for the first time your show, I was won over by your humor and trial and error way of making a DIY show. Now I wait excitedly for the next radio show or podcast. It is the most entertaining thing I watch, either on iTunes or general television. You present a wealth of knowledge, and I love finding out new things that I didn't know before. I couldn't write a better paragraph than that,
huh? That is great. And so we're even better than NASCAR, I guess.
So there's a couple more paragraphs, and of course you're going to have to listen to this because I really like it. So
okay.
I take an environmental science class, and in October our teacher wanted us to come up with an environmentally friendly project that the whole class could help with. I had just gotten back from a football game at the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa. It was a night game, and I saw hundreds of mosquitoes and remembered worrying about getting bit. But suddenly, as it got darker, bats began to eat the mosquitoes, and I never got bit that night. I remembered your podcast about it and decided to suggest the idea of building a bat house near the school in an undisturbed area to help out with our football games. I pulled up your podcast on the class projector, and we watched you make a bat house, which we will be doing this Friday.
Oh, that is totally great.
Cool. And then there's more here. I also gave my teacher a link to Real World Green, which is our green show that's on hiatus right now. And she loves it. It's perfect for a class based on environmentally friendly practices. She wants to make a CD of Real World Green episodes so she can show it on the projector. Hey, great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for deciding to take the leap and just do Garden Fork. I love it along with several of my friends. That, and it definitely impresses my grandmother's friends when I tell them I know how to can, and it's all because of you. Keep doing what you're doing.
All right, Jordan. Thanks so much.
Isn't that cool?
That is totally cool.
So, you know, that's great. You just kind of get someone to, you know, take up the torch and run with it. Don't be afraid to do stuff. Just go out and do it. I mean, I have failed miserably so many times. So,
as have we all. Goodness
whether it's
knows.
Whether it's asking a girl out on a date or trying to fix my car, you know.
Yep.
You're going to fail. I go talk to colleges sometimes and stuff and high school kids, and I go, look, you are going to fail. That's how you learn. You know, and if you never try, there's always going to be that what if I, you know, I should have, you know.
Yeah. And also, one's stories of failures are always the most fun stories to tell after.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, after you get over, you know, breaking your toe from kicking the wall or whatever. But yeah, that's definitely the deal. Okay.
All right, one more thing. I was listening to Radiolab, which is a NPR program.
Right.
And I have it on the iPhone. I download it and listen to it as a podcast, as many people do. And if you haven't listened to this, it's pretty amazing. They do a lot of what's called sound design. They make their podcasts. It's almost like you have this visual thing in your brain. It's like a movie. They just have great audio editing and sound design with these two guys talking, like Charlie and I are, but they have all these cool sounds and stuff.
Right.
But they were talking about, I can't remember what it was. They have a theme through each one of their shows. But it got down to doing CPR.
Right.
cardiopulmonary resuscitation. And you're supposed to do 30 compressions and then two breaths. You know, you pump the person's chest and then you breathe into their mouth twice.
Right.
But there is an optimum speed for pumping their chest. If you do it too slowly, the blood never gets around the body parts. And if you do it too fast, the heart doesn't have time to refill with blood before you pump it again.
Right.
And the ideal speed is 100 presses a minute.
And there is a song that just happens to be this ideal speed. I know all about this. And that song is...
It's Staying Alive from the Bee Gees.
Which is just too cool.
Isn't that great? And it's all about staying alive, staying alive. Don't die as you press this person's chest. So... I can't do it. Charlie could do the thumping of the song the better. So when you're pressing on someone's chest, just think about Staying Alive song, because people can remember the beat of a song.
Yeah.
Because like whenever you sing Happy Birthday, everyone knows it goes fairly slow.
Yeah.
And Staying Alive is, you know, dun, 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 dun.
Just,
well, you
just
can
about
tell from the way I walk, I'm a ladies' man, no time to talk. You like that falsetto voice?
That was really awful, Eric. People, now people are going to be walking around with that in their heads.
Sorry, delete. Anyway, we just want to leave you with the Bee Gees, and next time you do CPR, if you don't know how to do CPR, take the class.
Yes, indeed.
So there you go, Garden Fork Radio. Tell your friends about us. We're on iTunes and on our site. And you can also watch a ton of web videos of ours. There's a bunch of new videos out there, by the way. We did a bunch of baking and other cool, fun stuff. GardenFork.tv. And you can reach Charlie, charlie@GardenFork.tv, or Eric@GardenFork.tv.
All right, then.
And there you go. Thanks a lot, everyone.
Bye.